Music New South Wales presents Sound Advice, You Got Played, How to Get Your Music on Australian Radio, featuring Gemma Pike from Triple J, Amelia Jenner from FBI Radio, and Niela Swiatek from Thinking Loud and October Records, and hosted by Mark Dodds from Handsome Tours. For more information and for other upcoming panels, head to www.musicnewsouthwales.com/soundadvice.
Tonight's panel's theme is You've Got Played, and really the theme of tonight is talking about how to get on radio and really understanding radio as a format in Australia. If you're a starting musician or you're someone trying to kind of break into the industry, or you're an aspiring publicist or someone who's trying to get music exposed and out there to the masses, there's a lot of things you can do yourself in terms of social media and the like, but I guess radio is probably the most accessible and simple traditional format that you can kind of come up against. So it's a really good opportunity that we've got these luminaries from the radio industry here tonight to speak to us. So just to get things started, I thought that I might have each of the panelists, starting with Gemma over here, to just introduce themselves and possibly say your title or role, but also just what that actually means day to day you do.
Okay, hello. I'm Gemma Pike. I am the Assistant Music Director at Triple J. I'm also Weekend Lunch presenter. And day-to-day for me is being part of the music team, listening to all the new releases that come through, the stuff that gets serviced, going through those, sorting those down into what gets added to rotation, feature albums, programming the shifts for the presenters, and basically anything that has to do with music getting played on Triple J.
Hi, I'm Amelia. So I'm the music director at FBI Radio, which is just down the road. And my role is pretty similar to Gemma's in that I coordinate pretty much everything that you're going to hear on FBI, except for the specialist programs, which they get to choose their own programming. But the day-to-day generalist programming, I choose 95% of the music that gets played. I also look after all the interviews that go to air on FBI and pretty much any music-related content at the station or any events and that sort of thing that we put on, I curate that as well.
Hi, I'm Aniela. I am the PR manager at Thinking Loud. We look after a range of independent artists, artists signed to labels as well. We work with people like Remy and Winston Surfshirt and Sampa the Great. So we, I suppose, get sent things right in their early stages, their songs, and then I help them get it out into the world, whether that's online and press and with radio, which is obviously a really important part. And I also started a label a couple of years ago with a colleague called October Records, and I do a similar role there.
Cool. So I thought we'd just start on the radio side of things so that possibly people who are less familiar with the system can understand it a little bit more. So, Gemma, when you say that you're involved in working with the music team to select what's played on radio, when people turn on Triple J, how much of what they're hearing is being programmed by, you know, a select number of people, people like you, picking it centrally, and how much of, you know, how much thought is going into the average song that's being played on Triple J? Is it being selected by the DJ, or is it something that you guys are deciding?
It varies. So as Amelia was saying, specialist programs have 100% control over what they want to play.
A specialist program would be something like?
Like How with the Hip Hop Show, Lockie What with the Racket, Roots and All. So for a talk-heavy program, like Breakfast or Drive, we program 100% of the music that they get to play. Obviously, we do have discussions with producers or with presenters if there's anything that they particularly want, if they've got an interview coming up or if they've got a competition that, you know, they want a song that kind of links into it. Like Veronica and Lewis are trying to get the keys to a city at the moment, so we gave them Hilltop Hoods, Rattling the Keys, you know, things like that. Then we'll discuss with them. Then when it comes to shows like daytime shows like Zanro Mornings, Genfrica Lunch, they get two songs per hour that they can choose absolutely whatever they want. We do try to put an emphasis on new releases for those guys. So in an hour, you're probably looking at about 12 songs that will make up an hour. So out of those 10 given by us. And we do put a lot of thought into it. We like to think that in a 15-minute bracket, everyone's going to hear something that they're going to enjoy. So that's why we not only spread the songs that we've got in rotation across different points of the day, because people tend to listen to radio in the same sort of habit. So if someone listens between 7 and 8 in the morning, chances are they're going to listen between 7 and 8 in the morning every day. So you don't want the same songs to be repeated at those times. So we make sure that we put a really nice spread across the week with all of those songs.
That's a really interesting point. So Amelia, when you're talking about FBI, you said that 95% of the music that people are hearing is something that you've programmed. So just for people who, you know, aren't across the lingo, the notion of programming radio, because I think often when you're approaching radio for the first time, you're very much thinking in the space of, this is my song, this is my band. When you are looking at a whole playlist or a whole day of music, what's the key thing driving you in thinking about programming? Like, what do you think a good balance is, and how do you see FBI relating to its audience through its programming?
Well, I guess FBI is primarily a youth radio station, so its core audience are 18 to 24-year-olds. So our main focus is, what are people in that age bracket going to want to listen to? And to be an alternative to other radio stations as well. So we play a little bit of stuff that Triple J plays. We play stuff that Triple J wouldn't play. We play stuff that commercial wouldn't play. So we're kind of that alternative for people who want a bit of difference. But we also, we have to champion Sydney music. So 50% of the music that you'll hear all day, every day is from Australia, and 25% is from Sydney. So there's a huge focus on local music, and pretty much every program, if you look at the statistics of each show, there will be those quotas broken down exactly. So 50% Australian and then 25% from Sydney. That's a big focus, but we also recognize that there's lots of other groups that we need to be championing as well, like making sure that the gender balance is quite even, and also looking at like transgender artists, non-binary artists, Indigenous artists. A lot of focus on artists from non-Western countries as well, because we recognize a huge immigrant community in Sydney that probably want to be hearing more music from different parts of the world rather than just America and Australia and England. So within each hour, I'm thinking about all of those aspects, and then it all boils back to, what would someone aged 18 to 24 want to listen to?
So Aniela, we've heard from the kind of radio side of things about all these multitude of considerations that are going into what they choose to play at any point of the day. I guess what I'm interested to know is, you know, you have these powerful gatekeepers kind of on one side. You have these people who are making these kind of decisions, and often you're looking for not just what's a good song, but what's a good song in the context of the hour? How does it sound? Have these people heard this thing before? What's the balance? Are we playing too many male artists? I guess I'm interested, Aniela, in knowing where you come in, I guess, as a publicist. And if you're a band wanting to get your song on radio, what is your advice from your experience? Give us an idea, I guess, of how you work with artists to work with people like Amelia and Gemma.
Before I start, I'm very mindful as well that all my like strategy and stuff is about these guys. So I'm very conscious about not sort of telling them how I think it works. But I think for us, having, I suppose the way we start out with artists is that they will approach Thinking Loud, for example, and ask for us to work on their tracks. Radio is definitely a really important part. Online is, I suppose, one of the easier ways for new artists to start out, and we're quite particular. Like, I listen to Triple J and I listen to FBI, and I'm very aware of what they play. I'm probably not the target market anymore, so I'm also conscious of that. But I just think it's important not to, I've worked in labels as well, where you're kind of prescribed everything and you kind of have to take everything in. And we're lucky at Thinking Loud now that we can be selective about who we work with, because I don't want to just bombard these guys all day with what they should be playing, because that's not how it works. I need to actually be selective about what we send to them. I'm also very aware about the gender balance as well. That's something that's really important to me. So I'm quite careful to make sure that we have quite a spread of artists that we work with.
I guess it's interesting, and part of the reason I wanted to get this started was because Gemma and Amelia are involved in programming music, and Aniela is involved in servicing music that hopefully they will program. And I guess I just wanted to get into this idea of servicing, the thing that everyone's sort of wondering about. It's like, okay, I've got the music. How do I service it to radio effectively in order to give it the best chance of getting played? Why don't we just go down to basics? And maybe I'll start with you, Gemma. In terms of actually how music is serviced to you, and I mean in the simplest form, like, Are you getting CDs in the mail? Are things coming to you on email? You know, are people calling you on the phone? Like, how does this music and words from people like Aniela or just bands that are out there talk to you?
All of those things. Mm. I want to emphasize, if anyone here is thinking about servicing music, email is by far the easiest, most economical, fastest way for you to get your songs to us. In the last year, we've been moving towards going CD-less. It just creates a whole bunch of waste, and a lot of them can't be recycled, which is bullshit. So emails, most definitely. We also have 2 days a week that we have an open door policy. I also want to stress that just recently the ABC has upped its security, so it's getting a little bit more difficult to kind of just, you know, come in and say hi. It can happen, but you'll probably just hit a few.
It's a figurative open door policy. The door
figurative
is not actually open.
Open door policy. But every Monday and Tuesday morning from 9 a.m. through till 11:30, we're then approached by most of the major record labels come in and see us, a lot of the indies as well, and managers of artists, lots of independent artists can come in and just see us direct, and that's a really nice opportunity to come and speak to us face to face, tell us what's going on, what's the plan, talk through the track, if there's any shows coming up, all that sort of supporting material. We also receive stuff in the post. Obviously, we understand that people can't come in to Ultimo, and people give us a buzz on the phone. But I just want to stress again, email, so easy.
So first question, and this is actually, I'm being serious. Do you actually have a CD drive on your computer at this time?
I do. Guess what? Yeah. I had to ask for the mother of all stereos to be delivered to me, and they had to look long and hard because there was only one stereo they could find that had a CD tray, analog FM AM radio, DAB radio as well. It just doesn't exist anymore, CD drive. So yes, I do have a CD drive.
It's actually a big consideration and something to think about when you are going to radio, because if you go into any Apple store right now and start looking through all, you know, a lot of modern systems, they don't actually have CD drives. So it can be very easy, I think, sometimes for a new artist thinking, oh great, I'll send in the CD and the post office will take it to them, and that way I know they got it. But what you're really counting on is that it may land on someone's desk who's just like, what do I do with this thing? I mean, Aniela, would you say that you agree generally with the servicing?
Yeah, exactly the same. So email is just so easy, quick. So basically everything that comes through to me, and bear in mind, I probably get like 5,000 emails a week, but everything that comes through to me, I listen to. And then if it's good and I think there's presenters at FBI that'll like it, I can forward it on. I just got to type in a bunch of emails, send it around. But if I get 3 CDs, that's 3 presenters that get a copy. Whereas if it's an email, that's 15 presenters that could get a copy. So you're just way more likely to get into the hands of more presenters by doing it digitally. I don't have a CD drive. Like, I have a CD player, but it's a bit more clunky to pull out a CD, press play. Oh yeah, I like that. I'll burn it, upload it, send it to presenters. Like, I just don't have time to do that, unfortunately. So digital is by far the best way. But also, we have an open door policy as well on a Tuesday morning from 11 till 2 for publicists and record labels to come through and present music. And then once a month on a Monday afternoon from 4 till 6 p.m. we have a music open day, which happens on the first Monday of every month. We had one yesterday, and it's just a time for independent artists and maybe their managers to come in and present music and just kind of get a bit of feedback on how FBI works.
And when you say you guys are talking about digital servicing, what does that mean exactly? Like, are we talking an email, just attach a big juicy FLAC file to it? No?
No. The ABC, that'll bounce.
Yep.
The ABC has very, very small attachment limits. So even if you attach an MP3, it's not going to get through. SoundCloud, Dropbox, any third party external link, just put the link in. We can follow it. Easy.
Final question. If you are receiving an email unsolicited, because this is the other thing, a lot of these, you know, if you're sending your first track off and it will be unsolicited, you don't expect it to come. What is the thing that you're looking for? Like, what is the thing which helps highlight something to you? Like, do you need a catchy subject heading? What information do you need, bare basics, to be able to notice something amongst the 5,000 emails you get a day?
I need a clear subject heading, not new song. Yeah. That doesn't work. I mean, I'll probably get around to listening to it eventually, but if it's like band name, song title, EP title, whatever, and then because, you know, in your inbox, you kind of get a little preview of what's in the body of the email, and generally the first line is like, hey, we're a Sydney band. I'm like, great, I'll open that. Or, hey, just representing this new band from Melbourne. I'm like, cool, I'll open that too. So like getting straight to the point. Don't fluff around. Make it clear. Make it obvious. I get 5,000 emails. Make it as easy as possible for me, and it'll be much easier for your music to get on the radio.
Cool. Well, Anila, I mean, we've just heard from, you know, the radio people about how they'd like to be serviced. I guess the question I'd have for you as a publicist is, how effective do you think that is? I mean, obviously, anyone who works in any kind of industry is always like, oh, the most effective thing is just send me an email. You know what I mean? Because an email is something that they can process in their own time. What do you think the balance is? I mean, you're obviously a publicist, so your job is to go and rattle some cages. Once a band sends an email, if they're not hearing back or it's not going, like, how important do you think it is to get in faces of people like Gemma and Amelia who would rather probably just be getting an email?
I definitely try and do everything over email. I've learned that over the years, and particularly keeping things like short and sweet is very important. I suppose that's part of my job, is that every week or every couple of weeks I will go in to see you guys, hopefully not annoying everyone too much. But to be honest, like, I understand that I'm also the same, actually. Like, I kind of, sometimes it kind of annoys me when people call me and I have not prepared for the call and stuff. Like, I like to know, I like to be prepared. I guess I can understand why sometimes it must be frustrating to have people go in, but I'll always prepare before my meeting. So I'll make sure I send an email, send a note about what I'm going to talk about so that they have the opportunity to listen and that they know I'm coming in, so we can talk about it that way.
You're very good at servicing.
Agreed.
By the way.
There you go. Talk to Anyella. Well, that's really great. I mean, I guess that kind of what you brought up there, Anyella, about being mindful of the people who are receiving the emails and their job and how many emails they might be receiving, and thinking about how you can communicate your message effectively and easily without necessarily annoying them or getting on their nerves. Are there any, besides making, adding a big attachment that's going to bounce, are there any obvious things that just drive you crazy?
Heaps of text, like an essay about the artist.
Yeah.
Can't do it.
It's yeah, not being succinct is important, definitely. But I don't really have any pet peeves. I mean, it all boils down to the song, right? Like, if the song's good, that's what's going to talk to us. It doesn't matter about your fancy press photo or, you know, as long as you've got the information in there, you're there like, okay, I'm playing these shows. The track's embargoed until Friday.
Do you get many startup artists with an embargo on their track? That's pretty professional. I'd be impressed by that alone.
Sometimes.
Yeah. Well, that's actually really, I mean, this whole point about the song's really interesting. And I'll probably go back to you, Gemma, for a second, because obviously, Triple J Unearthed has been something which has kind of taken on a lot of life of its own in the last, I mean, how many years since it, in its current format, since it's, has it been 10 years?
Yes.
In the digital site?
Yeah, I think it's 10 years on the website.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
then about 14 or so with,
of when they used to send you cassette tapes and you'd have to sit there and listen to everything. And
Missy Higgins,
Killing Heidi
Grinspoon.
One. Yeah. Can you just explain Triple J Unearthed as a platform to anyone who might know nothing about it?
Yep. Triple J Unearthed is a website where independent Australian artists can upload their music. Once it is up on the website, there's like a profile page. You can have up to 3 songs on there. You can link video clips and your gigs and stuff. It's then open to be reviewed by users, super users, Triple J and Triple J Unearthed staff. Also, what it facilitates is the possibility of being a competition winner. We run a whole bunch of competitions for festivals around Australia to be able to open spots on the festivals. And it also puts you in the possibility of getting rotation to Triple J Unearthed, which is our digital radio station.
So you've got Triple J and you've got Triple J Unearthed and you've got Double J, which is this kind of digital station now. Is this all the same people or is there different teams? Like, are you all in the same structure or?
It's an umbrella. Triple J Unearthed and Double J are our digital stations. Double J is a digital station that facilitates people who probably listened to Triple J like 10, 15 years ago, listen to it now and go, what the fuck are these kids listening to? Listen to Double J. Perfect. Lots of like mid-noughties dance. Double J is really good for that sort of like 30 plus, 35 plus. Triple J Unearthed is for that independent artist, and that's a digital station, and then they all sit underneath the Triple J umbrella. So Triple J is the only one that has a broadcasting license for FM radio.
And obviously Unearthed has had a huge amount of success stories over the past bunch of years of artists that have uploaded their music to Unearthed. You know, we could name zillions of them, but everyone from Meg Mack to the Rubens and Chet Faker and all sorts of people who've used this platform. When you're going through this myriad of songs that have been uploaded to this service and the information that's there, at what point are you guys looking at something that's being played on the Unearthed station or is on the site and then deciding that maybe it gets carried over? Are you guys looking at stats, like how many people have downloaded it? Are you guys like, oh, that's number one chart, we should play it? Or are you just seeing how something is and then listening to the song going, you know what, this will actually work on the main station?
Yeah, it's kind of that last way that you described it. So I do just want to mention that there are individual teams. So the Triple J music team, we're listening for Triple J. Then there's a whole Unearth team and they listen to literally every single song that gets uploaded to Triple J Unearthed. And that's not only to find the best new talent, but then also to check for, you know, obviously we don't want anything offensive. We want to check for samples, making sure that people are uploading their original music and not, you know, just taking other people's original music. But then we are very open at Triple J between all three networks. We have multiple meetings within the week where we'll all get together. So we even had one this afternoon. It's a bit of a round table. So we have the music director from Triple J Unearthed. We have the executive producer come in. They say, hey, you know, these are the things that we've been really enjoying. This has just been uploaded. Likewise, we have all the presenters come in. So Zan will come in and say, hey, this sounded really good when I dropped it in on mornings. Jen Fricker, Dom Alessio. We love to like kind of just get together and have a chat and just recommend stuff to each other. So a really great example of this recently is Ruby Fields. She uploaded a song called I Want. It was uploaded in the morning on Triple J Unearthed. Whoever was listening on that queue that day went, damn, this is a great song. Got put onto Triple J Unearthed radio that day. She went for a little snooze, woke up later, 20,000 extra views. And it just blew up from there. We added it to rotation pretty much straight away. So sometimes they'll just be like one of those, you know, one in a million tracks that the music director will say, oh my God, have you heard this? And but everything is subjective, like music's subjective. So we definitely have a little chat between each other. So there is no hard and fast way, but every week, if not every day, we're all communicating with each other.
Aniela, I might jump back over to you. So let's say that you're a starting artist, you've got an EP that you've just put together and it's got five songs in it. Do you have any recommendations about the way you would go about servicing that via the platforms we're discussing here? Like, would you just upload the whole thing to Unearthed? Would you hear one song, go, oh, this is my Triple J song, I'll put that on Unearthed, and this is my kind of weirder left field song, I'll send that to Amelia at FBI? Like, how would you go about phasing that delivery?
Definitely, it's drip feeding singles. And also, this is just one strategy, but I wouldn't be servicing different songs to different outlets. I would definitely be picking one song and focusing on that. Just because it doesn't sit with Triple J, that's completely fine. It doesn't mean the EP or the album's not a success. Like, it might do really well with lots of other community radio stations. It might just do well online. It might just do well with press. They don't always work all together. I think that's one thing that I'd really want to emphasize as well, is that I think sometimes people get a little bit hung up, and particularly artists get hung up on, yeah, what they deem as a success, and that would usually be a Triple J edition. And while we love Triple J and value so much what they can do, there's so many other avenues. And also, don't make music with a station in mind as well. Like, you just have to make exactly what you want to make. And then pick what songs you think will work, what you think could be singles and stuff, and really, like, just get behind yourself. Don't worry about trying to please different platforms.
Amelia, obviously FBI has played a really crucial role in Sydney in breaking a lot of artists who, you know, some have gone on to become, you know, big in their own right, and others have kind of started an FBI and gone to Triple J. Can you think of either a recent Sydney artist or an artist historically that has kind of come through the FBI system, and what do you think they did right in terms of how they service music and what came to you?
Well, I mean, the obvious example there is Flume, who didn't even win the Northern Lights competition and, you know, submitted his music to FBI, but that was a long time ago, so things have changed a lot since then. But, I mean, the Ruby Fields example is a really good example. Her manager just, like, maybe a week before it went to Triple J Unearthed, and not that that's a priority, like, we don't need to get things first, but just a week before just sent me an email being like, hey, I've just started managing this young girl, she's really talented, I really like her. Like, no bullshit, it was just straight to the point. Sent me the track, I was like, yeah, actually, this is really good. And then we pretty much added it straight away, and then she uploaded it to Triple J Unearthed, and then that happened. So I guess, yeah, it's like a good idea to be in as many places as you can so that it can get as many ears and eyes on the music as possible.
Does it play a role in terms of how you look at a song that's being serviced? Does the fact that someone has a manager or has it served to you via a publicist sort of weigh into your decision-making at all, apart from just a band reaching out and saying, hi, this is my song?
Not at all. I think that's the really good thing about FBI is it can be a really nice stepping stone to a bigger platform like Triple J or commercial radio or bigger places. Like, FBI is kind of goal is to champion smaller, unestablished artists and kind of give them their first radio play. So like artists coming to me who with their very first single don't have a manager, don't have any gigs, don't have anything, and the music is really good, then it can get added to playlist or presenters can play it and they can get an interview, and then, you know, people that listen to FBI pick up on it and then it grows from there. So like FBI is a really good stepping stone, and having a manager or a label or not is like, it's neither here nor there, really.
So, Aniela, insofar as what Amelia is saying, FBI has an open door policy. Triple J, you can just upload stuff anytime you like to unearth. There are a lot of avenues open these days to bands and upcoming artists to present their music directly to radio, or at least put it on someone's radar. At what point do you think it's necessary for a band or an artist to, you know, they're sitting there with an EP, at what point do you think is a good point for them to think, maybe I need to get a publicist? I mean, if someone just walked up to anyone in the crowd and said, oh, hi, you know, I'm a professional radio plugger and give me $2,000 and I'll take the music to Gemma Pike, what question should they be asking themselves about whether or not they're ready for that to happen?
I think Gemma said before, it's just firstly down to the songs. And I'm also seconding Amelia there when she was saying about it's a really good stepping stone. I can remember years ago before I was involved in music and just had friends in bands and stuff, and they were so frigging excited when they would get played on FBI. I can constantly remember little screenshots of their first plays and stuff. So it's really, really nice that there is still platforms like that, and not just FBI, like community radio, like Triple R and RTR in Perth and stuff around the country, that bands and artists have that direct access to. I suppose for us, Thinking Loud and Publicity Company, we have a lot of artists that it could just be their first EP. But I do actually think that it's probably not worth investing the money right at the beginning. I do think that you kind of need to give it a shot on your own just to see if it's actually the music that you want to keep making. I suppose for us, if you're looking for publicity, it's like looking at other artists that you really love and seeing and looking up who represents them. I mean, I've worked in a couple of different labels, and Thinking Loud for me is exactly my taste. Like, I felt so lucky when I got to start working there because all the music that we work with, in my opinion, is fucking awesome. And so it's a really natural, easy job for me. It doesn't feel like I'm doing publicity. It doesn't feel like I'm selling it. So I guess you just kind of have to trust, you ask opinions. Like, if you see bands that you like and you like see them in a lot of places publicly, like reach out to them and ask like who their team is and stuff. You've just got to do a little bit of research before you spend the money.
Can I jump in quickly?
Please.
I just want to footnote, just to Triple J in particular, that it is not a requirement that your song needs to be on Triple J Unearthed in order to get Triple J play. Everything is up to you as an artist, as a band. If you want to take on a publicist, that's your decision. You need to weigh up whether putting your songs on the Unearthed platform is going to be the best thing for you. Yes, it does put you in contention for Unearthed airplay for those competitions, but it also makes your song available for a free download. If you want to be capitalizing on your iTunes sales, that might be something that you don't want to do. And as far as getting airplay on Triple J goes, it is absolutely not a requirement that an Australian artist has to be on Triple J Unearthed.
No, of course not. Would you say though, just in general statistical terms, that if you've got a really great song, do you think that it being on Unearthed and going through that channel might make it more likely that it will come onto the attention of the Triple J music team? Do you think that it going through Triple J Unearthed and getting some spins there might help create some momentum, even if it's not a requirement?
Well, statistically, you would just have more ears across it.
More people listening.
More people would listen to it, as in staff.
Yes. But yeah, I think the main point as well is that Gemma is trying to make is that uploading something to Unearthed does mean making it available for free download, and everyone has access to it. And that's obviously a choice any artist would have to make. And, you know, it's just like any other investment, I guess, you make as an artist, deciding whether, you know, it'd be like choosing to hire a publicist or choosing to potentially forgo income that may come from that song. That's a financial choice. And yeah, like, we focused a lot, I guess, on the publicity side of things that you do, but on an October Records side, being that it's a label that produces, I guess, you know, maybe saying specialist style music, as Gemma might put it in a programming sense, in that it's heavily dance and electronic. If you come out of something, you've got a great house, you know, house music track, and you look at it and you think, okay, this is a really great song, and maybe Nina Las Vegas KLP. Sorry, it's been a while since I've serviced radio. Maybe KLP will play this on the program, but I don't see this getting on the main playlist. It's just not right. what are the avenues, like, and even outside of FBI and Triple J, like, what other radio avenues are there for people who are producing, whether it's dance or metal or folk music or whatever people are doing?
I suppose with October Records, it is pretty electronic leaning. I think that for us, because my background is sort of more from, like, club records and stuff, and this, and my colleague as well, and he's a DJ. So our contact list is, I suppose, more servicing like DJs. So it goes out and the song comes up through clubs rather than directly to radio. We definitely, like, again, I'm very across what shows are on FBI and Triple J and stuff. So I'll still email the presenters directly, but you know, we have some pretty like club leaning tracks that I'm definitely not going to send them to like Richard Kingsmill and Gemma and stuff, because I just don't know if it's quite right for that. I don't really know. Again, that would be when we would focus on online and press, I suppose. I don't really know if there's, aside from community radio and club servicing, I don't know if there's much more we can do.
But just throwing this out there, are there other community radio stations in Sydney or elsewhere that aren't sitting here right now?
Yeah, definitely.
Could you name a couple just for anyone who might not be completely
2SER is awesome. There's Skid Row as well in Marrickville, and in Melbourne there's quite a few. You've got like PBS and SYN and Triple R. There's Radio Adelaide, and then RTR in Perth is one of my absolute favorite community stations. They are sick. They program some really, really, really great shows.
Yeah. I started there.
So, yeah, I mean, that's the other thing to throw out there as well, that if you're trying to get your music out there, FBI obviously is a big community radio station in Sydney, but there are others and there are equivalents in every city throughout Australia that you can potentially approach. So it is worth digging in and doing some research there potentially.
Just quickly on the genre thing, like with specialist programming, we have like a folk show, we have like a punk and hardcore show, just like Triple J does. And, you know, all the music that goes on playlist has to come through me, but all the presenters' email addresses are on their program page on the website. So if you know that you make like an experimental drone track, for example, and you really like Ears Have Ears and think that they might like your music, their contact info is on the page and you can email them direct. Or you can come to me, send me the email and be like, hey, here's my 15-minute experimental drone track. I think Ears Have Ears will like this, not what do you reckon about an ad? So like knowing your audience and knowing who will like your music and sending it to me, and I'll be like, great, I know exactly where to send this.
Amelia will like the experimental drone track as well. Well, look, I think I'm going to open it up to questions. There's a really great one up the top to start off with from Anonymous. Amelia and Gemma, how much do social stats play into what you do? Like when you hear a track or whatnot, are you going to their Facebook and saying, oh, they got 500, they got 1,000. Whoa, this band's got 10,000 followers.
I go to their socials. I mean, for a tiny developing artist, it doesn't really matter. But sometimes for a bigger band that I might not be totally across, but I kind of know that they're famous or popular, I'll go to them and just check who of my friends like them. And if it's just like all of my music industry friends, I'm like, maybe they're a buzz band. But if it's like friends from high school, I'm like, maybe people actually like this band. But that's just like, you know, case by case. But I do go to the socials and just check out like what they've been up to, if they have been playing any shows, just generally what their vibe is like, I suppose. Like we don't live in a vacuum, like every little thing plays a part in the music.
So does it help to, if you go to someone's Facebook page or whatnot and you see that they've got a shot up there and some contact details and they've played some gigs and some other bands like them, does that enhance your confidence in investing time in a band?
Well, I think at the end of the day, the song speaks for itself first and foremost. But if I'm maybe like, oh yeah, this is a cool song, and then I go to their Facebook page and they've been playing quite a few gigs and like, you know, I mean, the amount of fans doesn't really matter. Like the amount of likes on Facebook doesn't matter. But, you know, if they've been playing a few things and they're like kind of look active and they're updating stuff on their Facebook, I'm like, oh yeah, this band like kind of means business. I might give the song, you know, a second chance.
And Gemma, would you say?
Yeah, you can buy followers on every platform pretty much. So I always take that
them?
With a grain. 449. So I always take that with a grain of salt. But it does definitely help if you're sort of sitting there and, you know, it's a really great song, but you just kind of want to get a little bit more of the bigger picture. I mean, for local bands, I definitely like to go check them out live. And if I see the set and go, okay, right, yeah, they've got more material to back up that one sick song that I heard, that's really good. But yeah,
sometimes you do need to go and just, if you're weighing things up and you want a little bit of a bigger picture, particularly if it's an artist that's like sort of blowing up overseas and you're like, damn, where did they come from?
Yeah.
So it does help. But yeah, like I said, you can just buy followers on everything nowadays.
It sounds like the follower counts aren't so important, but that the appearance that a band gives on social media can help flesh out your understanding of them, and that it's worth thinking if you're a developing band, let's say that you do get Amelia's interest in or Gemma's interest in your song, so much so that they actually go and seek you out. What are they finding and what are they going to see? And, you know, the stronger that looks, I guess, and the more professionalism, it can only help, you know, even if it's something that's not going to be necessarily the only decision maker. Aniela, throwing over to you for a second, because there's some interesting questions that have come through. When you're talking about being a publicist at Thinking Loud and the fact that you guys are very selective, in terms of all the things you get approached by, I mean, how many projects are you working at any one given time? Like, how many things do you think you can work on at once?
You're probably asking at the wrong time because I'm a bit overwhelmed at the moment with work. But we probably have, like, aside also just from artists, we work across brands as well. We do a lot of music culture for brands. So we also work Boiler Room in Australia. We've got Rebel Music Academy, Rebel Sound Select, and then probably about 10 to 15 artist campaigns at once. And it's me and I have three girls that work with me. And then there's another side of the business that kind of looks after like brands and partnerships and stuff, which we're not as across. I actually, like, we work on so much stuff that isn't right for radio because I guess also luckily at Thinking Loud, it's diverse music taste, but we all like pride ourselves on our A&R ears, and it doesn't matter if it's not going to be right for radio. We've worked on plenty of stuff. Like, we worked on a record for a Melbourne artist called Darcy Bayliss earlier this year, and that is a niche record, but we loved it, so we took it on. Obviously, there's a line that has to be drawn with our capacity because we need to make sure that if they're paying us, we want to make sure that you're getting the work that you're paying for, and sometimes we just don't have the capacity to do that. But, and I'll be very quick and honest to tell people as well if I think the track's going to be right for radio, because if it's not, then there's so many other strategies and so many other things that we can do around it.
Yeah, look, I think it's a good quality as well though too, because sometimes generally it's just not time for you to pay someone a large amount of money to do a job for you. And I think the other thing about it that's good about talking to people like Aniela is the fact that they turn people down isn't necessarily a bad thing, because sometimes it's the people who are coming to you saying, oh, hey, I can do this for you and this is how much it costs, that you might need to, you know, be a bit more wary of, because with all the platforms available, you don't necessarily need that person to be your publicist on day one. Back on the radio question just for a second, is there a particular genre that FBI or Triple J are more likely to play? I guess that varies, you know, a lot, because there's so much, especially in FBI, there's so much specialist programming. Let me ask more it this way. If you're an artist who doesn't make music that fits necessarily into the pop realm, how do they go about finding a space on the station that is Triple J or FBI outside of the playlist? I mean, Aniela kind of touched on this with house music, but it's kind of useless, I think, in some ways to ask, oh, what's the most likely music to get played, because it varies so much, and also you're not going to change the kind of music you make to try and get played on Triple J. But, you know, if someone out here is in a hardcore punk band, what would their steps be?
So outside of our playlist, that's what you're asking.
Yes,
outside of the playlist, be familiar with the shows that we broadcast on Triple J. If you play in a punk band, service Josh Merrill, who hosts Short, Fast, Loud, which is the punk show. Don't service, you know, Catchy from Roots and All, because it's not going to fit her program. So just be familiar with who you're sending it to. Don't do like a blanket all-star female. So yeah, I think it would just be about finding the right show.
Cool. Yeah. I think the other thing to think about, though, like Amelia said before, that if you make a particular genre of music, if you're making really great metal music and it appeals to people who like metal, those people might not even be listening to Triple J Breakfast because it might not appeal to them at all. Like, you may have a lot more chance of reaching your audience by just being on the racket and, you know, engaging with those people once a week than you would be being chucked in once every 10 songs. Just quickly, actually, because we never really touched this, can you explain the difference between the playlist and just things that you play?
Yeah, okay, so the playlist is every single week we add songs to rotation. So we add 8 songs into full rotation. So within those 8 songs, they need to have a split between genres, male, female voices, local, national, international, split between states, et cetera, et cetera. It's like a big jigsaw puzzle. Out of those 8 songs, we then assign them rotation. So that goes from high rotation, which are songs that you'll probably hear 2 to 3 times a day on the station, medium rotation, rotation, which is once a day, and then varying forms of other rotation. But the main one is light, where you'll probably hear the track once every 3 to 4 days. So those songs then go into our computer system, and they're the songs that we use to create the playlist. So they're the songs that have been sort of processed into the system.
Aniela, in terms of publicity, there's a question up here asking what sort of costs are involved. And I guess that's a very open question, since depending on what kind of campaign you need and, you know, also depending what level at in your career will greatly determine what you're charged. But can you sort of give an idea about just in general what the cheapest campaign that someone might be at, whether it's from you or anyone else, this isn't a quote, by the way, what the kind of the cheapest, most basic campaign might cost and what an expensive PR campaign might cost? And also maybe just tie it in, because someone sort of asked, should I just hire someone who does radio or should they do other things?
To be honest, I don't even know if, like, I know that there are just radio pluggers out there and stuff, but I really think it's the whole package. Like, you want to get people doing other things as well. And most publicists that I know anyway do everything. This is like just really, really broad range. And this is taking into account a few different, because before I worked at Thinking Loud, I would hire publicists to help us out in the label and stuff. But I know that, say, if you were doing a single campaign and it was sort of for radio, online and press, it would probably be around the like $1,500 to $2,000 mark. An album campaign can easily be, again, it depends on the level of artists and stuff. Like independent artists, I would say maybe $6,000 or $7,000 for over maybe a 6 month campaign. But I've seen quotes before that have been like $15,000 to $20,000 for an album, which is, to me, that's a lot of money, but it varies.
And I've got someone saying that they're in a band and they want to get a publicist. How do I get it? I mean, I think you kind of mentioned before, just look at, you know, find someone you like and find someone who you think has had a successful campaign or a band that's like yours, and maybe just ask them who did your publicity.
Yeah, because I don't want it to sound wanky where it's like, oh, you just know who to ask and whatever. Just research it. And most bands or like managers or whatever will be pretty open with recommending people if they're happy, and they'll also be pretty quick to tell you if they haven't been happy. So I reckon just ask the question. And even if that's just via like Facebook or email or whatever.
This is actually a cool question as well. Someone's asked, if I'm on radio, do I have to have professional recordings or bedroom recordings fine? I mean, this is, again, probably an open-ended question and might be a bit different between Amelia and Gemma, I would say, but have you kind of got an answer to that?
Yeah, I mean, any type of recording is fine so long as it's high quality. So in terms of the file that we get, it needs to be at least a 320 kilobyte MP3 or a WAV file. Some people send through the Triple J Unearth link and they're like, here's the download, but that's only 192 kilobytes, which isn't broadcast quality. So long as the file is good enough quality and it sounds good, then I don't really care where it was recorded. It could be recorded under your sink for all I care. I mean, it just needs to sound good for radio and suit the purpose. So like, you know, a DIY punk track is probably not going to be recorded in a really high-end recording studio, but that's the point. That's the vibe of the track.
Yeah, and I mean, even Gemma, I mean, Triple J, I would say, probably might have slightly higher standards of what might be played, but you guys have played Royal Headache and other punk bands on the radio that use quite lo-fi techniques and stuff, and it's been fine?
Yep, totally fine. Exactly what Amelia said. Just make sure that you've got a WAV or a 320. I prefer WAV. WAV? WAV.
God, I thought we were...
WAV is short for WAV, isn't it? I'm pretty sure WAV is the file, like point WAV.
I've always called them WAVs, but geez, who knows?
But yeah, as long as the quality. But yeah, totally. Like the new Wet Lips album just came out and we've been giving that a little bit of a spin and it's super lo-fi and it's great. Mm. I mean, like Amelia said, that's
as long as it doesn't sound like there's something wrong with people's radios that they need to fix, then it should be fine.
Well, that's subjective.
Yeah, that is subjective. Different people have different standards. I've got a cool question up here about AMRAP. There's the AMRAP service, which is a free community radio service where you can upload your music to AMRAP with a picture and some information, and they will automatically send it to a whole bunch of radio stations. I mean, just in your individual perspective, Amelia, is there any difference to you whether it comes via AMRAP or whether it comes via direct email?
I prefer it to come direct, to be honest, because it's pretty easy to find our contact details and just shoot across a quick email. And some people send just the AMRAP link, and like that's fine for me because I have an AMRAP account and I can get in there and listen to it and download it. But if I really like the song and I want to pass it on to a presenter, and all of our presenters are volunteers and they come in for that 2 hours that they do their show, and they might not have an AMRAP account. And so there's just, it just creates that extra step for me to be like, hey, can I grab a download link? And that might not come through for 3 days, and then that's putting you behind. So it's a lot easier if it just comes direct to me. But in saying that, AMRAP is a really, really invaluable service for getting your music into the hands of, like, Australia has hundreds, maybe even thousands of community radio stations that are tiny, and 2 Bob out in Taree, wherever that is, like, he gets all his stuff from AMRAP. So, you know, there's so many other places that you could be getting your music to rather than just FBI.
Yeah, AMRAP literally services just, God, I don't even know, dozens, hundreds, who knows, of just stations that you never have heard of and we've never heard of, even in our wide experience. So, you know, it serves a valuable purpose, but it sounds like, you know, having some sort of direct relationship or servicing with FBI and Triple J and other big community stations can be valuable. I've got a question up here, Gemma, that relates to you. You mentioned before that you've got this system of rotation. So if someone gets to spot play, you know, you've programmed to just drop it in on lunch, or, you know, how do they progress it once it's gotten to that point? Like, should they get all their friends to ring into the station or bombard you with texts saying that was the best track I've ever heard?
Yeah, street teams are real. Songs are incredible in that they will sound completely different in your headphones and then again on the radio. Very often there are songs that we need to hear in the context of it being sandwiched between two other songs at 12 o'clock on a Thursday in order to kind of like get the idea. Sometimes songs are like growers and you're like, oh, I wasn't sure about this track, but damn, it really stands out on the radio. It pops. So it really just comes down to the song. You know, if we've put it into spot rotation, if we've put it into light rotation and we're like, oh, you know, this is sounding really good, it's got the chance to move up. And likewise, it goes the other way. So, you know, high rotation tracks will come down to medium rotation tracks will come down into another rotation category. This is going to confuse you, called recurrent. Basically, like, you know, big singles that have had their time in the sun, but we sort of give them a spin every now and again. And then really big hit tracks will go into like a gold rotation. So it's all very fluid and it's all very, it just depends on how we're hearing it. Like, it's literally hands-on. We just go through every week and go, all right, cool, how's this song sounding? Yeah, let's bump it up a bit. Or, you know, it's kind of grating, it's burning a bit, let's just pull it back song by song.
And is getting in high rotation, like, everyone gets in high rotation, becomes a massive celebrity?
No.
And hugely successful?
No, it's not the be all end all. High rotation is just, you know, tracks that we want to get more plays on throughout the day. I'm trying to think of what's in high rotation at the moment. New Angus and Julia Stone, Meg Mac, Arcade Fire.
Before we go, I think we have one question over here quickly, over in the corner.
It's very broad. I think that there's pretty much a publicist for every genre out there. We don't have any preference as to which one you're using. I think it's up to you to sort of do a little bit of research. Like, if you... Do you play in a band?
Yes.
What sort of music do you play?
Kind of indie folk.
Indie folk stuff?
Yeah.
Sounds cool. I'd recommend, like, if you just find some bands that you really like, check out their Facebook. If they've got a record label or a publicist listed on there, start doing some scoping like that. But we don't give preference to anyone at all. It's totally up to you what avenue you use, and they're all equally valid.
Never ask an ABC employee for an endorsement of any one private business. You'll always get an answer like
editorial
that.
Editorial policy.
Yeah.
Me, on the other hand.
Yeah. Well, look, I just want to thank everyone for coming, and I hope everyone's learned a little something today. So thank you very much for coming.
Thank you.
Thanks,
Mark.